Got a little bit of this, a little bit of that coming up on the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard. We are going to chat with the television play-by-play voice of the Vegas Golden Knights, Dave Gosher, but he also called the Boston Bruins games forever and goes back to the Providence Bruins. And he has seen it all, how to get into the business, what was his journey like. Really cool story on that side of it. You'll never guess what inspired him to call hockey games. And what he sees around the league, both in Vegas and the series that he would love to be featured in the first round. And five Cinderella teams. Who's going to go to the ball? I'll break it down for you in the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Heads up!
Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
What are you going to do?
You!
Ah! Hit him. Light him up.
Yeah, nice hit.
That's solid.
I'm going to run you. I'm just waiting for my shift.
Producer Bob, I know you don't like being singled out, but I'm going to give you some props here. That's some of your best work, assembling those clips off the opening. Every time I listen to it, I try to listen back to every episode, but I'm always inspired. I got to use that line next time on the old Thursday night Pickles game. Oh, we're not very good on the ice. We got to entertain ourselves. We've probably won two games in the last two seasons, and that's spring and winter and summer. So really six seasons we've won a couple of games. We're good guys in the room, and we make the league exciting, and we build confidence all over. But we got to get some chirps going on the ice, and producer Bob, that's some good stuff. I was mulling over some late season hockey topics for this week's episode, and I got to admit, something just jumped out at me. And I don't know whether you've ever thought of this, but for a time of the year, I'm talking about this stretch drive that just exaggerates the importance of every single team result compared to a win or a loss or a blown lead 4 months ago. The impact on the individual trophy races, outside of something statistically based, is really minimized. And here's what I mean. I'll walk you through this, and I'll use the Nashville Predators as an example because they're closer to the middle. I'm not going to defend the East or the West. But also, they've been exceptional lately with this point streak. Should this run, this franchise best run, have occurred in December, players like Roman Josi would have jumped to the front of the Norris Trophy conversation. And the favorite for top goaltender would have slid over to UC Saros. Both guys will get attention in the Vezina and the Norris at the end of the year. But what they missed out on was an extra 3 months of being in the conversation. So you go, player A is having a good January. He might challenge Roman Josi. Player B has been awesome in February. Can he work his way into the conversation for best goaltender with a workhorse like UC Saros? They've missed out on the extra time to be discussed. Basically, if you want to win an award as a player, as an individual, you got to be great at some time before Christmas. It's just great marketing. Like, imagine how the narrative around Alexander Ovechkin's season would have been different had he been this good as he is right now at the start of the season. And we'd start tracking the Gretzky. When's he going to do it? Can he possibly get it done early next season, mid next season, or at least sometime in 2025? Like, we wouldn't have had that. He's at 4 goals, at 12 goals, at 16 goals. The drop off wouldn't have been as noticeable as the challenges at the start. Now he's picking up steam, but we would have been talking about Ovi so much more. Now, he's not going to win an individual award, but it's the same sort of approach that I'm trying to sell you on. Now, to come, I've got my five Cinderella teams entering the Stanley Cup playoffs. I want you to know, as you mull it about, these aren't underdogs. These are what you would call Cinderella stories if they would happen to win the Stanley Cup championship. Teams that you would never have picked at the start of the year, whether it was retooling, rebuilding, restructuring in one case, a team that was coming off a rather distracted summer, or a team that's just come from outside in. It's going to be a lot of fun. These teams weren't Stanley Cup favorites, in my mind, at the start of the season, the middle of the year, and in a couple of cases, they're still kind of working my way into contender status right now, but I still consider them Cinderella stories. So despite a couple of teams being high up there, they're still Cinderella stories. Bill Murray. Let's get over to our guest, who I must admit is the most particular of any person we've ever had in the green room when it comes to snacks. Dave Gosher, he'll admit some of this during our conversation. I'm sure he'll go down that path. Hey, he's the uber-talented TV play-by-play voice in Vegas. He landed on the Strip in year one with the Golden Knights after a lifetime with the Bruins, both in Providence and Boston, calling the 2011 Stanley Cup championship that was won on the road in Vancouver. Sorry, Canuck fans, that was unnecessary. I apologize. There's just no reason for that. Stay with me, okay? Because I've got some good vibes coming your way. Dave was in the radio booth back east. Now he wears makeup like the rest of us on the television side. And I want you to know, Vegas is going to be a topic here. But his knowledge is such that I really wanted to get some insight around the league because he's done the national thing. He keeps track of it all, just like me. And he's got a different perspective. And I lean on Dave a lot. One thing I want to get to is his story and how he got to the booth. And we all love stories. How did you end up on television calling hockey? And I also want to know what series he would love to see in the first round. He's a really good buddy, an okay neighbor. And for the first time, he's a featured guest, a solo guest on The Chirp with Darren Millard. Just want to preface this. I know you as much as any guest I've ever had on The Chirp. So when I ask you a question, say, about Vegas, and you want to say, you know the answer to that, why are you asking me this? It's for the viewer, the listener, okay? So don't call me out on it.
So don't respond with, stop with the stupid questions?
Yeah. Is that, okay. I get enough of that at home when I'm with the family.
Right. Or in the office with Shane and I.
With Shane and you. And that does happen quite often. People don't realize that. We look up over our cubicles and you will say, that's dumb. And then I will go back to work and try to not be as dumb anymore. How are you?
Shane is not as, his language is a little more colorful than that's dumb.
Yeah. If he's less mean to me, I'm like, boy, he's having a good day.
Yeah. He is the beacon of joy.
give me a general status of the Vegas school, big picture, because people will be listening to this with 5 games left. They'll be listening to it with 10 games left. Where do you think Vegas is right now?
Well, I think it kind of almost depends on the day, Mallard. You know, as we sit here now, you know, they're coming off a tough overtime loss in their last game against Nashville. They had 2-3 goal leads. The game before that, they play well for most of the game against St. Louis, give up the lead, but find a way to win. So, I think there's a little bit of uncertainty right now with a couple of things. One is their inability to really get on a lengthy roll. Now, they had won 6 of 8 recently. There's questions about their goaltending. And with Aiden Hill hurt, can Logan Thompson carry them down this stretch here if need be? Alex Pietrangelo has missed a bunch of games. When's Tomas Hertl going to come into this lineup? So I don't know. I just think there's a lot of things kind of up in the air with this team all at the same time right now at a critical stretch of their season. That's not even mentioning Mark Stone. You know, we know he's not going to play until they get into the playoffs, and they might have to go a little ways to the playoffs to get him back. So I think there's, unfortunately, at this time of year, probably too many question marks than certainly they would like.
Have they entered the stage of being overlooked or flying under the radar? Is it to that point now because of what's happened in the second half and the injuries?
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, if you're the defending champs, if it's possible to fly under the radar. I think they've seen that as the season's gone on, that every night teams are coming at them. You know, Bruce Cassidy does make the point, though, that it's at some stage of the season, maybe that focus changes to the teams that are at the top of the league, you know, and maybe those teams are you know, are getting it from their opponents every night. So, no, I don't know if they've if they're under the radar now. But look, they're a team that had a great start through the middle of December, and they've been a couple of games under 500 since then. It's not like it's been a small sample size. I mean, this has been going on for a little while. Full marks for making some huge moves at the trade deadline, but they still have some work to do. I mean, I'm pretty confident they're going to get in the playoffs. I'm not sure if I was, I don't know if I could have said that a few days ago where that lead was 3 points in the West. I think they'll get there. I'm optimistic they'll get there. What they can do when they get there, I think that's, you know, that remains to be seen. And a lot of that will be, you know, predicated on the health of this team.
So the reasons Vegas will repeat are what?
Well, they've been there before. I mean, they do have this championship pedigree. And I think that they have shown the ability, and certainly they did last year, to elevate their game when they really needed it. And they have shown it at times this year as well that, you know, when they really need to be at their best, they're able to do it. The other part of that is their health. They will have a good chance to go make another long run if they can get healthy. You know, last year they did that. You know, they didn't have Mark Stone the second half last year, but they got him back for the playoffs. This year he's injured again. They've gotten some injured guys back. I think it's been hit and miss with some of those players that have missed significant time. So if they're going to make a deep run, A, it's because they know what it takes to do it, and B, if they can get most of the band back together again.
You've been with Vegas from the very start, from the Darlings and the Cinderella and the marvelous run to getting to the Stanley Cup final and challenging to now to the point where there's a recent poll doing the top 10 rivalries in the National Hockey League, and the number one rivalry was Vegas versus 31 other teams. Is that in response to you, or is that in response to the Golden Knights being too good? Like, are people going after Dave Gosher?
No, I hope not, because I really don't have anything to do with it. I just sit up there, yap about it on television. There's probably plenty of people that don't like me, but that's fine. You know, it is funny, that narrative, Mallard, to your point, you know, they were the misfits, this Cinderella story in year one. You know, and I think a lot, some of that is, look, they have been, what they've done in six short, let's just, you know, see how this season pans out, but six short years has been unheard of in the NHL. I mean, yeah. The way that they've been able to do this. Look, they're bold. They're not afraid to make moves. They have an owner in Bill Foley that is a very, very competitive man, a very smart guy, who was not willing to sit around and kind of wade into the water as an expansion team. Now, that first year accelerated everything by 10 years. You know, I tell the story, Mal, you remember this. The Ottawa Senators came into the league in, what, 30 years ago, roughly. And I think they won 10 games their first year. That's a long, long season. I think now with, you know, Bill Foley spent $500 million to come into the league. Seattle, it was $650. You shouldn't have to suck for 10 years if you're spending that kind of money. You know, the expansion rules should you know, be favorable to you coming into the league. But that's one thing to have favorable expansion rules. It's another thing to do what the Golden Knights have done here over the last six-plus years. So I think some of that is, if you're a fan of another market that has either not been able to gain any traction in a long time, hasn't done anything in the playoffs for a long time, and you see this team in Vegas doing what they've done for 6 years, I think it's more annoyment than anything else.
Envy, so, yeah.
Envy, yeah. And I get that, I guess. But, you know, I was having this conversation with somebody recently. I said, look, you can debate all day long moves teams make and don't make. Anybody could have traded for Jack Eichel, and anybody could have traded for Alec Martinez, and anybody could have signed Alex Petrangelo, and, you know, they traded for Ivan Barbashev. You know all the moves. I mean, they just traded for Noah Hanifin and Tomas Hertl. You know, teams, you can do that if you can figure a way to do it. They figured a way to do that. And, you know, they have changed the model a little bit. You know, the draft and development thing, that's not really their thing. It's, we're going to, if we see a need, we're going to try as best we can to fill that need. And for the most part, you know, I'm leaving out the trader for Mark Stone. You know, for the most part, they've been able to fill those needs.
I agree with all those examples except for one, Tomas Hertl, because nobody knew he was even available.
No.
That's one where there's still managers going, how did that happen?
I know. And I was shocked when they were able to make that move, A, and B, he signed for another 6 years, and C, you know, I think it's 17% San Jose's holding on to.
Yeah.
So, but again, it's not like they're making these moves in a vacuum. There's 31 other GMs that could make your own moves. If you think you have a need to fill, they've been not shy at all about filling it.
Let's open up the conversation to the Western Conference. Is there a best team on that side of the conference divide right now?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we saw Vancouver recently, Mallard, and I don't know how you feel, but their team speed, you know, when they came to Vegas a few weeks ago, it's pretty impressive. You know, what Rick Tocchet's been able to get them to do, Thatcher Demko's been, you know, been really good in net. I know we got nicked up here recently, but they're a team that I think would give anybody a lot to handle. Edmonton always seems to kind of be the in vogue pick. I guess we'll see if that stays that way. I mean, Zach Hyman is having a career year. Dallas, Golden Knights, saw them in the conference final last year. I think all those teams are in the mix. You can make an argument, you know, and people have made it in our circles here recently, as the Golden Knights have gone from like first in the Pacific to now a second wildcard team. You know, well, do you want to avoid Edmonton in the first round?
Right.
In the 2-3.
It's the same thing in the East right now, too. Like the wild card is not a gimme in any respect.
No. So, I mean, right now, like they could run into Dallas. They could run into Vancouver.
Colorado's there.
Colorado. Yeah. Winnipeg seemed to slip a little bit lately, but there's still, you know, 10 games left in the year. So I think you can make an argument for any of those teams, and the Golden Knights included.
There's no best team in the West, right?
I mean, I don't really think so. Do you? Yeah. I think there's a lot of really good ones.
No, and you've got questions about Vancouver being playoff proven, going back in there. You've got issues with Edmonton never getting over the hump before. LA has stumbled in the first round. All are good teams, but there's flaws that you can poke at. Same with in the Central Division right now. They're so balanced. So I think it's as wide open as we've ever seen.
Yeah, and you know, Bruce Cassidy uses this phrase, you know, that every team's an imperfect team. Hmm. Vegas was last year. But especially when they got to the playoffs, most nights they were able to get to their game. It wouldn't surprise me to see anybody emerge from the West. I don't think it's, you know, Colorado's been on a real good run lately, but who knows?
Do you consider Nashville in that mix, or are they just on a really good run?
Well, you know, Shane said to me in the last, when Vegas had the two big leads against Nashville recently, he bumped into Barry Trotz between periods. And Barry Trotz said to him, well, we knew this was going to end sometime. Well, it turned out it wasn't that night, because they came back and beat Vegas. So, no, I think there's something there with Nashville. You know, they've figured it out. You know,
they're ahead of schedule. This was not expected.
Not at all. But, you know, they get Forsberg back and healthy this year. They tweaked their roster significantly. You know, Yossi's having another fantastic year. Saros seemed to get better as the season's gone on. But it took them, until they almost, when they came to Vegas and they scrapped the whole U2 thing in the Sphere, right? That was in February. But I do think one of the things that does concern me a little bit getting back to Vegas, Mallard, is I'm not so sure, and I think the coaching staff certainly would agree with this point, that just because you get into what's it going to be, the third week of April and the playoffs start, that all of a sudden, now we'll get going. I think that's a dangerous way to approach it. I know they're not approaching it that way, but, you know, and look, the bigger picture is as frustrating as their last game, as we tape this, was blowing 2-3 goal leads against Nashville. They have taken a turn for the better. You know, they had won 6 of 8 before that, but, you know, they're kind of playing playoff games now before the playoffs, whereas last year they didn't have to do that.
You went to U2 at the Sphere. Was it that good that it would have inspired a franchise record point streak for Nashville, that being canceled?
Yes, it inspired them. If we're going to take this away, we're going to get our act together. Yeah. They were pretty darn good.
They're pretty good. Okay.
They were really good, but it was the whole experience of being there, the video board, and you know, I will tell you, and we had good, we were very fortunate. We had some really nice seats.
You're a high roller.
Yeah, I know people.
Mm-hmm.
I think I do. And they're not crazy to know me. But if you're way in the back, like up top, it's steep.
Steep.
But anyway, yeah, the show was great. The venue was even better. And yeah, I think if I was the Predators and they pulled that out from under me, I said, okay, well, one of two could have gone either way. Well, yes. Then the hell with it. The hell with this. Or, okay, maybe they're right and we should start to pick up the pace.
Is there a matchup that you want to see in the first round in either conference?
You know, it's and I don't know if it's going to work out this way. That Boston-Toronto always seems to.
Well, you've called those.
Yes, and it seems to be a hell of a series. You know, I don't know if it's going to work out that way, right? The Bruins and Florida are kind of neck and neck for the division title there in the Atlantic. You know, would Colorado-Winnipeg be a heck of a series in the first round? Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and even like in the, you know, in that Metro division, like, I think it's going to be funny. Who's going to win the East, right? It's same thing in the West. Like, the Rangers, as we sit here now, lead the league, if I'm not mistaken. But could they be upset in the first round? So I think of all of them, like, just that Boston-Toronto thing, is, you know, the Leafs just never been able to get over the hump against the Bruins. Yeah, and I, you know, saw that a couple of those up close. I think that would be pretty intriguing. And I think from both perspectives, right, Toronto's probably tired of hearing about it.
Tampa and Florida would be one for me.
Be like, awesome.
It would be vicious. It's really ratcheted up their regular season rivalry. And who wouldn't like another go around of Edmonton and Vegas?
Yeah. That'd be great too. You know, and I think that, was it 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Tampa played Florida, whenever it was.
Yeah.
And,
2 years in a row, right?
2 years in a row. Right, yeah. Right. And yeah, I mean, and the Edmonton Vegas thing is, you know, that's legitimate. I mean, we saw last year, that was the toughest series Vegas had. And there were times in that series, especially when Edmonton got going on the power play, that you thought, man, this might not go Vegas's way, but to the Golden Knights' credit, they were able to contain that a bit as the series went on and, you know, and find a way to knock them off. I mean, I don't, you know, we sold on Edmonton's goaltending. I don't know. Like, not sure. But, you know, you can make the same argument for where Vegas is sitting right now. You've had Aiden Hill that's battled injury a good chunk of the season. You know, Logan Thompson's had issues at times with consistency. It's interesting to point out, I think, too, Mal, at this point last year, the two goaltenders that were carrying the load for the Golden Knights were Lauren Brossoit and Jonathan Quick. It was not Aiden Hill and Logan Thompson. Hill comes in that Edmonton series, and we know the rest of the story. But you know, they're going to need someone here to carry the load down the stretch.
What do you think the reaction will be when it finally arrives and Boston is alternating their goaltenders? Because that's the plan right now.
Yeah. Well. And you can make an argument. I don't know if it cost them that series against Florida last year, but they went away from it. You know, they stayed with it all year with Ullmark and Swayman. And then kind of by the time they got Swayman in there, I don't want to say it was too late. I mean, you give Florida full marks. I mean,
game seven, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're down. They were down in the third period of game six and they won. And they're down and with a minute left in game seven and they win the series. So I do think that's one of the things that, I don't know. Do you want to ride one guy in the play? Yeah, if you've got a clear cut, you know, Georgiev, Demko, Saros, right? If you don't, then I don't know if it makes sense to deviate and go away from what led them last year to the best record in the history of the league. But, you know, I think they'd be more prone to go back to that this time around because they may have paid a bit of a price for it last year.
I think it's really hard to alternate. I think coach never in the playoffs never wants to alternate.
Very rare.
Truth be told. And Monty sounds like he's bought in.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm reading some of his comments even before this season coming off last year. That was one of the areas that, you know, probably if they had a do-over, You know, the other thing is, Mallett, I was talking to a friend of mine about this recently. If what was it, game five of that series, if Brad Marchand scores on a breakaway late,
Right.
wins, it's all over and no one's talking about it. And who knows? Who knows what goes on? But it doesn't take much. You know, we've seen this, you know, we've both been doing this a long time. But most of these series, it's not much, right, that they can turn on. You know, and think about the Edmonton series with Vegas last year. Was it Keegan Colasar took the major penalty
Yep.
in game
Five.
five?
Four. Yeah.
Four, five, five, I think, right? In Vegas?
Yeah, in Vegas.
Edmonton only scores one goal in the major.
Yeah.
They could have scored four, right? So, you know, a lot of these
Alex
things.
Pietrangelo was suspended for that game. Like it
Yep.
was, there was
Doesn't take
wavering.
much. Yeah, doesn't take much to turn these series in either direction.
Hey, you've been doing this a long time from the American Hockey League to radio in the NHL with Boston and now TV in Vegas. I don't know the backstory. And this is a legitimate question. How'd you get into this?
Oh, I'll give you the short version, bud. I played hockey since I was a kid, growing up in Rhode Island, and you know, played through high school and prep school, and then I went to Boston University, and my plan was to try to walk on the hockey team there. Jack Parker, their legendary coach, was still
Yeah.
there. This was in the early 90s,
You guys have been
and
negotiating for a while.
yes,
Yeah.
well, I was trying to negotiate, and I ended up being the last cut from the JV team at BU, and they were like, "We're fine without you, Dave. We'll make it." But back then, you know, this was, like I say, Mal, this was like 1990, 91.
Were you really the last cut from the JV team?
From the JV team.
I didn't know that.
But, you know, and look, maybe I played JV for a couple of years, but they were loaded. I mean, their top line was Tony Amonte, Keith Kachuk, Sean McEachran. That was their line, their first line.
And they
So
couldn't find spot for you.
they didn't need an undersized, not overly fast guy from Pawtucket, Rhode Island, shopping. So, but I kind of, I just thought, I still love the game. How could I stay involved? And the broadcasting thing was something that I used to think, well, you know, these guys get to travel with the team and they can go around the country and they get in the games for free and you get paid a little bit. And that was my, as deep as my thought process went. I didn't know how to do it. I had no family in it. I had no friends in it. I didn't know anybody. And, so my last 2 years of college, I started doing the games on BU's student radio station. Nobody listened, nobody cared.
Were
They
you any
weren't
good?
missing anything. No, it wasn't very good. No. Well, let me modify that. I always say it wasn't very good, and believe me, it was not very good. But it was good enough, right? You
You
know, when you're younger.
had there was a natural connection to it, or you
Yeah.
had to work at it.
I had to work at it,
Okay.
but I chose hockey as, you know, I did some baseball and football in college too, but I chose hockey because it was my favorite sport. It was a sport I thought I knew the best. You know, I didn't have to learn the rules, right? I didn't have to. And my cousins would tell me that I was one of those kids, if we were playing street hockey or wiffle ball at my house. I'm an only child, but my house just kind of seemed to be like the place where all my buddies and my cousins hung out. That I was the kid that would call the street hockey game as it was going on when I was seven, you know,
Really?
or eight. Yeah. So my cousins would tell me, well, if they ever ask you, tell these people you've been doing it since you were 7 years old. So, well, they're not going to buy that, though, you know. But anyway, I was just one of those, you know, wiffle ball in the backyard, home run, you know. But anyway, it was good enough. And I still have somewhere in my garage most of the cassette tapes. Because you remember cassette tapes,
Yes.
Mel, you're old like
I
me.
have a cassette player.
Oh,
So
I need to get one of those.
if you need to listen to it, I can loan you my cassette player.
Okay. I would probably cringe listening to it, but I still have most of the games I did in college. And but I guess it was good enough, right? And then I think a lot of us follow a similar path where I would seek out input from people that were already working at a high level, especially, you know, Boston was, you know, I was in Boston. I was in school in Boston. And I thought, well, they know what they're doing. And pretty much most of them said, hey, you're on the right road. Stay with it. You need reps, which I certainly did. So anyway, I'm making this a longer story than I got out of school. I was able to get a job in Wheeling, West Virginia in the East Coast League right out of college about 3 months after I graduated.
Good for
picked up everything I owned. What's that?
Good for you.
Yeah, well, fortunate, right? Like you have that, because I didn't know. I knew Hockey East, because that's where BU played in that conference, and I knew the NHL. I knew nothing about the East Coast League or the IHL or the A. I knew nothing about it. But I was lucky to get a break right away and went there for 2 years. Didn't know where it was. I mean, you know, Wheeling, West Virginia is a pretty small place. But I did games for 2 years there. Big fish, small pond. Like it was FM radio before that was kind of the in vogue thing to have games on FM radio. And we did a dozen games on the NBC affiliate. We simulcasted in the Ohio Valley. And the Wheeling Thunderbirds at the time, they've been the Nailers a long time since then. You know, Wheeling's about an hour and a half, about an hour from Pittsburgh. And the Penguins had just won back to back in the early 90s. So it was a very rich hockey environment. So I did that for 2 years. Threw my hat in the ring for the Providence Bruins job in the AHL, which is Providence is 10 miles south of where I grew up in Pawtucket. Fortunate enough to get that. And then the Bruins job opened up in 2000 and was fortunate enough to get that. So, but by the time I had, you know, by the time I got the TV job in Vegas, I had done 24 years of radio, you know, between the East Coast League and the American League and the Bruins. If you want to even throw in the last couple of years of college, I mean, so I was ready to, you always have that little thought sometimes in the back of your mind, like what's next? What's the next thing here? And for me, it was going to be at some point to try to move the TV.
You still do some radio on national levels. Yep. And you do the TV for the Vegas Golden Knights. I've done TV in the national level. What's the difference? How do you approach a TV game compared to a radio game? And how do you call it differently? Or do you?
Yeah, I call it different. I always say, Mel, it's funny how it works. Like in television, you have to talk less and they pay you more.
Yes. Radio's fun. TV pays the mortgage.
I mean, if you know, we're all here to just get put enough money away to retire. So, TV, I pull back a lot more. It's much more of a produced medium, as you know, with replays and graphics. And, you know, Shane's got to, you know, work in all of his analysis. So somebody described radio to me, you know, it's a pretty small band on radio. You know, you have yourself and your partner and the producer. That's about it. Maybe you've got a studio host. Television, it's a much, much bigger band that you're dealing with. So, but I was ready for that. You know, I thought I had done a lot of radio. I felt very blessed that I was able to do a lot of big games with the Bruins over the years. Cause you know, they, especially, you know, from the Stanley Cup in 2011, they, you know, they really had, had a huge resurgence, you know, in that market. But, so I do call it different. I wanted that. I was ready for a change, and you know, I just feel blessed that we've, you know, you're a huge part of it here. We've built what I think is a heck of a regional show.
If I gave you a game, I know you got to take a call here in a second. Last one for you. If I gave you a game 2 hours from now between two teams that you don't normally call, what would be the priority to prepare? What would you have to lean on to get yourself as ready as possible, and other things you would just leave on the table?
Yeah, I would have to scribble out like a line chart for each game, right? And just do the best you can with it. You know, and people ask me like, how do you know the players of the other team? Well, truth be told, I spend not most of my time, but it's probably 60-40. Prepping for the other team. And I've seen the Golden Knights play for 7 years. So, you know, it's more of a challenge if you see a team once or twice a year, teams from the East, right? You see Columbus a couple times a year, you see Carolina a couple times a year. I could figure it out, you know, if you said, hey, it's 5 o'clock and we need you to do this game at 7 and you don't know these teams. So I would have to scribble out a line chart, watch warmups. I always tell younger kids, watch warmups. They're right there in front of you. And try to cobble it together, but it wouldn't be the ideal scenario. But I'd like to think I could figure it out. Anyways,
would you slow it down? Would you talk less? Would you be more vague?
I would slow it down.
Yeah,
I'd slow it down because it's because I think if you don't know who's who just like that,
yeah,
it that makes it, what's the word? You'd have to be more passive in how you call it, as opposed to, I like to be proactive, right? And I always try to think, well, especially when I was doing radio, who has the puck? Where does he have it? And what's he doing with it? The last two parts of that now aren't as important because people can see it on television. But I still do work in a little bit of, I don't know, I'm not afraid to say, here he comes through center ice or down the right wing. I don't know. Like, does it matter that much? Even if
I like it.
Yeah, I don't. I think if I really listened, if I really broke down, I guess, how I do what I do because of all those years in radio, there's still a radio tinge to what I do. But, I think it's been able to translate, over to television. And I think on TV, especially knowing maybe when not to talk. When not talking on radio is called dead air. On television, it's not dead air. You've got some pictures to tell the story.
You keep a very neat hotel room.
Yeah, it's neater. The computer screen's limiting the chaos, to be honest with you. But it's not bad. Like, I just got here at 2 a.m.
Your bed's half made? That's impressive.
Well, yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, but there's all stuff on the bed. There's all debris on the bed. Stuff over here and stuff over there near the television. Yeah, it's I'm probably neater than most. My OCD kicks in.
It makes you who you are, and you're very good at what you do. This has been a fun conversation for me, even though we get to talk all the time. This has been a little bit of a road down memory lane and learning about you. 5 years in for me. That's good.
Yeah. Well, take your time. I mean, we see each other every day. You could ask these questions in the office, for God's sakes.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Darren.
Hi. Good to see you. Ballard. It's about the length of the conversation. Just move on with our day.
Be good, buddy.
All right, pal.
Gotta say, I'm nowhere neutral on this. I admit it, but Dave should be doing more on the national stage than he does. He didn't even ask me to say that. The dude can just bring it, and he's so fair when he calls a game, and he's entertaining, and he's not afraid to laugh, and he's just a fun dude to listen to. I feel like I'm hanging out with him when he calls a game. Now, most of the time, I am doing that on the VGK broadcast, but when I listen to him on the national games, it does feel comfortable. On to the topic of Cinderella teams. The league's so balanced right now, I wasn't even sure I was going to be able to come up with five teams when I kind of went down this rabbit hole. And I wasn't necessarily intending to talk about it on the podcast, but I was wondering, are there five Cinderella teams out there? This might have been the first top five with only three or four entries, which would be a violation, which I would accept, and which I would move on from. But I did. I got them. It's all good. In fact, I don't even think I had to squeeze anyone in there. They're all legitimate Cinderella Stanley Cup hopes. Less than a month out from the Stanley Cup playoffs, here are my five Cinderella teams, starting with the Vancouver Canucks, leaders of the Pacific, battling for the West top seed. It makes this, from the outside, looking in, a little bit of a ludicrous suggestion. But just bear with me here. If you're a passionate fan and you're in the BC Lower Mainland, you're really upset with me right now. But as I walk you through this, it might make for an even more fun journey in the Stanley Cup playoffs when we look at, say, what happened in 1982, way back when Roger Nielsen got the Vancouver Canucks to the Stanley Cup final. They've been there before, haven't been able to win, but this is a team that kind of blends greatness and top-end production with the idea of, can they really do it? The Canucks didn't make the playoffs last year. They were expected to be a bubble team this year, and they have very little playoff experience, both individually and as a group. They have some in that bubble time, but something I keep hearing, and this is why I put them into this Cinderella category, Vancouver will be vulnerable. People tell me this in a series when the opposition can dial in a game plan, play a bit of a heavier game. Now, Rick Tocchet can't do anything about how the other team approaches playing his club, but he is a great coach, and this is the best team he's ever had entering a postseason. Vancouver has a lot of reasons to be confident, but there's also that part of being a Canuck fan where it's you against the world, and can we really get this done? We'll be disappointed again. They have legitimate stars, and they've seized the moment by adding big pieces, Patrick Alvin, the general manager, and Jimmy Rutherford in the high areas of management. Would it be a massive shock if Vancouver won its first title? I don't think it'd be just bowl you over, but outside of the playoffs to in and what they've done, there'd be a pretty good year-end video about the Cinderella story of the Vancouver Canucks. Number four, Winnipeg. A dysfunctional end to last year played out, and it led to a very uncomfortable offseason. They bought out former captain Blake Wheeler, and who, by the way, went back and forth with head coach Rick Bonus at the end of the first-round series a year ago. Bonus was not very happy with the way the players performed in Game 5 of that opening round series, and Blake Wheeler answered back. The organization parted ways. Everything's good, but that's significant. A big player left the organization. Then Pierre-Luc Dubois was granted his trade out of the organization, being dealt with the Los Angeles Kings. And then you had two franchise greats. At the 11th hour before the start of the regular season, Connor Hellebuyck and Mark Scheifele signed long-term contracts. It was just a summer where there was no real comfort level around the Winnipeg Jets. But it's been really a strong run all year in the playoffs. But even as good as it's been for that group, you wondered, because last year they had it going, would it last? Hellebuck's been great. He's going to win the Vezina Trophy. They survived the Kyle Connor injury. Scheifele's been absolutely wonderful. Josh Moore, everybody's been good. Everybody coming over from LA, the additions that they've made. I love what Kevin Shavel day off, how aggressive he was leading up to the deadline. But still, They're the smallest market and the smallest rink outside of Arizona. And imagine, Canada hasn't won a Stanley Cup since 1993. How about if the tiniest market ended the drought and they had the biggest party in hockey this summer? It would be a Cinderella story with the Winnipeg Jets. Okay, now let's go to Hollywood and L.A. Two straight first-round playoff exits against the Edmonton Oilers. Nobody put less into their goaltending financially than the Los Angeles Kings. They just went at it differently. And where they've been gaining ground. And it's not your prototypical Cinderella story, but the route that they took this year, there was a lot of challenging moments between changing coaches, players calling out other players, not necessarily by name, but the real words were right on target, and it was not a pretty scene around that dressing room. The LA Kings were on the precipice of falling out of contention, and they clawed their way back. And it's almost not rags to riches, but let's pick ourselves up, let's get going, and let's get back into it. And it is Hollywood, and that's the script. Was it a great moment where they could have gone sideways? Could they rescue that? They did. And I'm calling the LA Kings, even though they made the playoffs the last couple of years, even though they pushed the likes of Edmonton to really extreme levels in those first-round series, I think the journey for LA puts them into Cinderella status. Underdog? Yeah, depends on who they play. But Cinderella, did you have Edmonton coming out of the Pacific? Did you have Vegas coming out of the Pacific? The play of Seattle last year coming out of the Pacific? There's a lot of reasons to maybe overlook what was going on with the Los Angeles Kings. So let's slide out east. And these selections are pretty obvious. Washington and Philadelphia. The Capitals are just trying to get another year, like Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh's not going to be there. Another year out of the greatness of Alexander Ovechkin. Hired a new coach. The coach went to the New York Rangers, went to a division rival. I don't want to play there. Coach there. He went to a division rival. Here comes Spencer Carberry. And it's a different performance out of the Washington Capitals. These aren't your uncle's Washington Capitals ripping it up. They played some good defense, and they stayed in the race.
and bought time for Alexander Ovechkin. And Philadelphia, new GM, new president, new direction with the Flyers. They were going to rebuild. So here's how it works. The Capitals holding on to their stars, the Philadelphia Flyers rebuilding and selling off. How do they get there? How are they Cinderella status? Because Capitals could have easily missed the playoffs here. They got some great goaltending out of Charlie Lindgren. They watched a couple of big-time franchise greats leave midseason, but they also just filled in from beneath. And I love Dylan Strom. I love some of these guys that have come in and settled things down. And I'll say this. It would be amazing if Alexander Ovechkin had one more deep run in him as he chases down Wayne Gretzky. That's the focus for Alexander Ovechkin. It would be awesome if he had another deep run in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Philadelphia, they're in a rebuild. They're not supposed to be here. It was announced last year. And it'll come. It will definitely happen. The players just delayed it. And it's so impressive that it's my favorite story in the National Hockey League season, what the Philadelphia Flyers have done. Both the Capitals and the Flyers, should point out, sold at the deadline. Yet they are in the mix. And they both may not make it. We'll see in the next couple of weeks. But right now, they are twins going to the ball. I don't know whether they can stay late, but if they do, it'll be unbelievable with Alexander Ovechkin and the return of the Philadelphia Flyers to relevance in the Eastern Conference. Charlie Lindgren's the Capitals goalie. Philadelphia Flyers lost their starting goaltender halfway through year and had to just support it from that. It's just some fun stuff. Really cool things between those two Eastern Conference teams. Five fun journeys. We'll see how long they go and how deep they go. Do you agree with me? Are they Cinderellas? Tell me. Vancouver fans, just give it to me, please. Vancouver fans might be upset. LA fans might be a little bit ticked off with me right now, but I want to know. Give me an idea of where you're standing. I really appreciate Dave Gosher joining us, and obviously, Bob Bender, you are the man. You are just a dude that sells out every episode, and I wish the people knew exactly how much you put into this project. Everybody, forward this, share it, give me some responses, like it, give us an idea of what you're thinking. Your feedback is welcome. I really do love it, even if it's not exactly positive. I want to know your take on things, all right? Just don't swear at me. Thanks for listening to the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.